I did have a recording earlier about what I was about to do. I was about to interview a woman who runs a coffee shop for the homeless, the people with nowhere to go, people with mental health issues, and things like that. And I'm just gonna run with this. I'm gonna do this once, which is I'm going to do that recording. The recording will be after this, and then there will be the eventual reflection on what she said, which would accompany the interview that she allowed me. So there is this little belief of mine, and it's not really little because of that, you know, because people can create realities. I learned that very, 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 the very, very hard way, that people can create realities and even, in fact, maintain realities that had nothing to do with the subject. And because these realities were maybe made based on malice or evil or harm, like what happened to me in New York, people get to take advantage of that, and they get to say things didn't happen, things happened, and if you look at things this way, it really looks this way. In other words, I have this belief that truth eventually tells themselves, and that, but there is that detriment, in fact, that truth is in fact the victim. In other words, because truth is in fact the victim, to actually get close to someone like me, to find out whether I'm real or not real, true or not true, you really, really, really have to be really, really lucky. In other words, truth is a victim. So, and I was thinking about this woman who, of course, I never met, but just met. And I'm looking at her, and I'm looking at this other woman that looks like that idiot who ran after the black kid and beat her down for no reason, just because he was black and he was a kid. And it was this same kind of purple color, whatever, maybe Muslim or whatever, I don't know. But the point I'm trying to make is there is this sense of prejudice that kind of circumvents, and people kind of trigger it, maybe downward, sideways, whatever. Mathematically speaking, it's nothing, it's shit. But let's imagine that, and that someone can, based on relativity with another person, extend something that is entirely untrue and all the truth. So in other words, you're going to look at a person and you're going to say you're going to hold some kind of distinction over this person, although you're a piece of shit, if you know what I mean. Because I'm looking at her and I'm like, if I were a guy, I'm looking at this shit, would I ever think of even remotely coming close to her or having any romantic feelings whatsoever? Or am I, what would I have been? What would I be? Would I be this insane little stupid person? And then I met this other person who was older. Just a normal person that actually deals with everybody in a very amazing manner, in a very cool manner, in a very amazing manner, with respect. And people that, you know, just that kind of idiot, like that idiot who ran after the black guy, like kind of idiot would not even give respect to. And that's where it comes from, that need for me to actually be Basil, that need for me to live this life the best way I know how, lucidly. And I want to be around people like that. I mean, I'm looking at her and I'm like, if I were a guy, and I'm not a guy and I'm not interested in women, I would want this kind of person. This person who would treat other people kindly, this person who would not maltreat anyone based on their race, the gender, whatever distinction that makes them different from another person, that would be the kind of person that I want to be friend. That would be the kind of person I want to be with. That would be the kind of person I want around me. And that definitely would be the kind of person if I were. I mean, I'm not interested in her, but if you were a guy, that would be the kind of person I really want. It wouldn't be some idiot who thinks he's all that and he's intelligent or whatever. No, my life is too short. In other words, my point is, although I'm not interested in guys at all at this moment, I just want to be on my own. But the point that I'm trying to make is, if I were, that would be that kind of person. And I just looked at her and I said, This is someone I want to interview. This is someone I want the world to know, not that idiot the media are running around with. I don't even know. It would be wrong for me to put two people on a pedestal and start comparing and hearing. That's not, that would be a contradiction to everything I just said. But at the same time, that's the person I want to know. And because that's the person I want to know, that's the person that I want you to know. Those are people that truly make difference. They don't have to be rich. They don't have to be those idiotic celebrities, those idiotic media, you know what I mean? But they have to be people that are actually real, realistically alive and doing these very subtle, very simple things to make difference, to make differences in people's lives. That matters to me. And of course, as I said, I won't interview them. It's hard. So I'm gonna give you a segment that actually, you know, just interviews her and tells you about her and my reflection on what she said, which would not be really, you know, talking on what she said, but my personal reflection on what I've experienced in based on what she said. And that will come after that. So this will be another interview that has nothing to do with the crap the media talks about. It will be for people who are cool-minded and who want to listen to this. And this is, as usual, free. Yeah. It's not so much about me saying something. It's about saying something about the world as it is right now. And my world as well. It's actually my world as well. And it's the world as well. And I want to know real people who are making differences, not idiots who are chasing after teenage black boys and beating them up for no good reason. So, after this, you'll have my reflection. Thank you.
I'm here with Rachel, and Rachel is the one who manages the coffee shop that allows people to come in, the homeless, people who don't have people to go, people who are out in the cold and have nowhere to go, and they also provide computer services for them, people who are looking for jobs. Rachel, can you tell me generally what you do here?
Okay. So what I do personally, my job here, I'm a director of the nonprofit organization that this coffee shop is a nonprofit organization, and I founded it with some friends. And what I do is I run it day to day. So we interact with people who are struggling with finances, struggling sometimes with mental illnesses, homelessness. Sometimes we basically we're here for community to help them to have support systems that are healthy, because a lot of people don't have good family, don't have good support systems in their lives, and broken and unhealthy. And so what we want to do is create healthy systems of support for people. I create a welcoming environment for people to feel comfortable and welcome, and I serve coffee. So I serve them tea and coffee, but it's more about the communication and the friendship than the tea and the coffee. That's just sort of, the tea and the coffee is a mechanism for connection, right? I sit and I talk with people. Sometimes people need practical help too. Sometimes people can't read very well or don't know where to go to get help. And so what I will do is I'll listen to what their struggles are, and I may help them fill out an application for an apartment. That's something that I did today. I helped someone fill out an application for an apartment, or navigate a government website to figure out what they need to do to get services. And I'm not an expert. I'm not a social worker, so I don't do anything that requires a license. I just do something that a good neighbor would do, right? A good neighbor might sit down and help somebody through that through those.
Rachel, can you tell me, you did say that, can you tell us, rather, you did say that you started this with a few friends.
Yeah.
You want to tell me what happened? Did life experiences get you here? Mm-hmm. What got you here?
Yeah, so the idea came to me when I was working as a mental health nurse. So I was working in a psychiatric unit in a hospital where people who were mentally ill and in crisis would be kept and stabilized, and we would be treating them. But I just noticed that so many people were so lonely. My patients, a lot of them, especially the ones who were homeless, were lonely, and they didn't have healthy, support systems. And I saw them coming back over and over and over again because they were kind of slipping through the cracks of our society. In the sense that they had places to go to get help. Services are the system is broken and services are rare, are not great, but they exist. It's just navigating them that is difficult to do without help, without friends, without support. And so I didn't want to be a case manager. I just wanted to be a friend who could help people who are falling through the cracks, kind of like grab them and throw them back into the system as much as possible, you know? And so that's where the idea came from. The idea came from my work life as a mental health nurse and just seeing the broken system, network, the broken support networks that we have in our society and how people are lonely, So that's it. And then I just kind of recruited other friends and we worked together to make this reality. And honestly, I have no idea how it happened, except the only thing I can say is Jesus. The only way this came about is because Jesus wanted it to be here. All of the funding, all of the support, everything, every little step of the way, like there have been times where we were like, well, not sure if it's going to happen. And then Jesus just came through and made it a reality. And he is the leader and the head of this. He is the founder. He's the one who made the idea happen. He is everything in this place. He is the light. So.
I understand, the religious aspect of this, mm-hmm. but I also want to very much acknowledge the fact that this people are the real mover. In other words, they are the ones who get things done. Funding is the least, from my point of view, you have to really have the art to do this, to actually do this.
Yeah.
So I'm going to ask you, what is the best part of this? And also the worst part. Please tell me the worst part.
The best part of doing this every day is seeing people, the relief on people's face when they say things like, it's really gratifying to hear people say that this was a help to them. And it's not personal, like I was a help to them, but that this place was a blessing to them. That's the best part. The best part is seeing success in people's lives.
The very possibility, the very existence of this place. Yes.
That it really impacts people in a really good way. Even if they're struggling, sometimes hearing them say, this was a blessing for me today. Like, it didn't change their life. It didn't change their situation necessarily, but just being here in this place gave them something that was
a
helpful.
Sense of being, mm-hmm. a sense of being, and a place to be.
Absolutely, and
the
welcoming.
Worst?
Yeah, the worst is probably the days when we've had some days where people have gotten upset and angry and stormed out. where we can't meet their needs. Sometimes people get fights. We've never had any violence, thank God, but we've had threats of violence. We've had people who are mentally unwell get angry and like walk out into the street or, just be unreasonable. And those times, while I understand it's based on mental illness and not personal, that's the hardest part for me to see that I don't have power there, to feel powerless in people's lives too, to make any difference. Like sometimes people are in really tough situations and I can't do anything. And that is really difficult to not.
So is there satisfaction in what you can do?
Oh yeah, I think there's satisfaction.
And you will encourage other people to, if they can.
Oh please, yes. Connection is key. So there's satisfaction in. No, it's out of order at the moment.
Rachel.
Yeah. Knowing the best and the worst, as you've expressed, would you do it again in a different world, a different life?
Oh, of course I'd do it again. Yeah, I think that the goal of the... I think human existence is based on connection, and any time that we can connect with one another in a kind and good and loving way, that is gratifying and fulfilling. And even the hard times when you feel out of, like I said, the hardest thing is not having control or power. Even in that, knowing that Jesus has control and power is what helps. So I would always do it. Yeah, I would totally do it again.
Would you do it differently? How?
Do it differently. I don't think I would. I think maybe I would do it differently. Well, it's a work in progress, so there's always a chance for changing things and growing. So I don't think I would do it differently. I think it happened the way that it was supposed to happen, and I think we're still on a journey, so there's always, you know, room for improvement and getting better, yeah, and change.
What would be your best advice for people who have the will to do these things? Of course, most people have limited resources or they believe they can't do it. From each section, because it takes a lot to actually bring something up.
It does.
Make it right. So what would be your best advice for those people?
My best advice would be...
And one second, mainly because people don't dream about going into nonprofit. They dream about making a lot of money.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
I mean, so that's the thing. Your motivation has to be to help people. I think the success, you know, here's what something I read the other day by Mr. Rogers. Mr. Rogers' quote that said, the best way to succeed, there's three ways to succeed. The first way is to be kind, the second way is to be kind, and the third way is to be kind. And I think he's totally right. I think if your motivation is kindness, you will succeed. And so what I would say to people who have that motivation to make an impact rather than make money,
rather than there's little room for egotism inside.
Yeah, it's not about you. That's the thing I would say is that you got to remember it's not about you.
And yeah, Rachel, that's why I wanted to make it about you.
It's not about you. It's not about me.
A little bit about you.
It's about Jesus.
Understanding that.
Yeah.
And I wanted to, you know, I want anyone to see that other aspect of that person coming from that person. That you have to have this thing. It has to be there.
Yeah. I think the advice I would give would be put Jesus first and don't be afraid to think big and go big. You know?
Okay, so I'm going to allow you, my darling, to sum this up.
Okay.
In one word. From the depth of your heart, what you used the word kindness. I just don't want you to use kindness like Mr. Rogers did.
Yeah, love. That's the word. Love. It's all about love.
And it can be complicated.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, it can be.
There's a lot of parts of love. Love can be boundaries. Can be loving. Boundaries are really important in work like this.
Mm-hmm.
Love of, you know, taking care of yourself is loving of other people too. You can't give if you don't take care of yourself.
That's rudimentary.
Yeah, but ultimately loving other people is at the base of everything we should
do. Well, having the room to do it.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, exactly.
Thank you so much for talking with me.
Yeah, thanks for your question.
I appreciate it. I think that, you know, the very human aspect of this that I wanted to bring out. I think you're a great model for it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
This is the reflecting portion of Rachel's interview. And as I said earlier, truth can be its own casualty, especially when truth is formative from horrible crimes committed. It's like a cardiovascular rot. The systemic flow is acutely poisonous and toxic, yet circulatory and inescapably systemic. And then you look at it, and it's like a different kind of abuse, not the one in Egan Paul looking back at you, and it's really like a monstrous eye without a heart, you know, a heartless, monstrous red eye without a heart, just looking back at you. And because of not just without a heart, but without an intelligent system to be able to really, really intelligent or omnipotent system to be able to really know what's really going on. But it's really, really, really acutely poisonous. But that's just, you know, what do you say about that? Water under the bridge, really, because if that is what it is about, then nothing good will really, really be achieved. So as much as good deeds are attributable to religion, especially Christianity, there is a great and vast potential for good deeds outside these realms. Yeah, I mean, you don't have to be a Christian to do it, but to be a good person, to treat people kindly, honestly, treat people mainly as Bible says as you want to be treated. But Christianity has proven over and over to be that major engineering force, and even I can deny it, as much as I, you know, have issues here and there with Christianity, being that it can feed the greatest good and also be the source of the worst thing that could ever happen to humanity. But that's just the way it is. I mean, look at Trump and the rest of the evangelicals and stuff. But we don't want to go there. We want to talk about Rachel. And so you can see Rachel going back to religion, and I believe that's her business there. That's okay. I mean, it's okay to have religion as your business for doing anything good, but my point is, I believe wholeheartedly that good can be achieved outside the Christian realm. Not that the Christian realm is not magnificently and amazingly so, however faulty they may be, but that it's really not just about religion. It can come from you. You can be that amazing person who really, really does not need religion to do anything good, and just be the good, that force of good. I believe that. And yet, you know, I don't even believe you need a lot of money to do it. I believe that if you committed and you probably go to the right sources, you will. My main thing is the ordinary people that go through the experiences and there's nobody there to help them. It bothers me greatly. It saddens me, bothers me, makes me emotional a lot of times. And I am definitely in this situation. And I'm looking at it, and I'm not one who doesn't want to give or give back. And yet I have this crazy difficulty. And I know that one way or the other, because I am a persistent, hardworking person, I may be able to maneuver these things. But it takes a lot to be able to do it. And I know that the lot that I see around here might not be able to do it. So it does bother me a lot. A lot for the ordinary person. But as I said, you don't have to be a Christian to do great things in this world. But I am just glad that you're able to meet to this woman, as I described her, definitely comparatively. And I had to do it comparatively because it wouldn't be that I, you know, like I've known her for a long time and I know this person to be a certain way or whatever. It's just a stranger that I met because I went to a coffee shop and I looked at her, and she's a great, amazing person, and I wanted to meet her. So
Rachel is just an ordinary human being. Religion is incidental, completely irrelevant, or rather extraneous, making a difference in other people's lives, and that's what matters. Okay, that's it. I mean, you don't have to, you know, have $1 billion to do it. You may have $1 billion and not even be able to actually do that hands-on good that Rachel does, which I so see her do. Like today, like she said, she helped a woman fill out forms. The woman didn't understand half of it. I mean, I can imagine. And then there was someone who came in and said that for 7 months he wasn't able to do something, and in 7 minutes they were able to do it. And so it's just that kind of simple little things that. But for me, it wouldn't be, if it's something online, something that can be done easily, I would do it in 7 minutes as well. But for some people who are not educated or who are not might have more difficult, and I didn't even think about that for a while. But you know, she talked about those simple things, you know, coming in and use the computer because you don't have any, search for jobs because there are no computers for you, search, the library is closed but she's open. Think about that for a second. The library is closed, but Rachel is open and helping ordinary people, helping people that cannot help themselves. Oh, so I'm glad you met Rachel. And then if something like this happens again and I see some ordinary person you should meet, I would definitely introduce you to that person and then give this same reflective tone. I hope that we all make a difference some way. Thank you.